FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 7919. Hey, well, don't forget the contest. If you didn't hear about it, just email me. I'll send you the link so you can sign up and join. You have to join by July 14th, 11:59 p.m. Predict the price of Bitcoin on midnight, July 20th. Prizes involved, all of that. Just email me, kl@kerrylutz.com. Tired of spelling out the ground rules and everything else. I'll shoot you a link. You could just click the link and enter. And if you've already entered, don't worry about it. We've got you covered. Anyways, a good friend, Danielle Park, is with us now, jugglingdynamite.com. We're talking about, well, Danielle, price of gold is up. The loonie is up. The dollar is down. Money laundering crackdown underway in BC, British Columbia. I'm going up to Vancouver for the Sprott conference, resource stock conference. That one is starts, I believe, on the 28th. That might be just the press day and goes through the 31st. So if you're going to be there, stop by and say hello. Look for me. Don't think you can miss me, honestly. But so, Danielle, interesting things coming. Accountability for all, whether it be Jeffrey Epstein or Chinese Shanghai money launderers. They're all going to get theirs, huh?
Oh, geez, I hope so, Kerry. It'd be nice to have just a spate of some sort of justice going through. It's become such a mockery that you have to think there's a tipping point. I know these waves are common through history and pendulum swinging and all that good stuff, but it's been such an epic fraud era. And, you know, to a large degree, we got it because there's been this lack of will or interest in prosecution. And there's been a sort of a doubling of complexity in terms of the regulation, but no actual enforcement imperative. And that's really shown up in spades. So, you know, people say, well, more regulation isn't going to fix it. And I would agree. I would say we need to have actual prosecution. And that's what you saw in that Epstein case, right? You saw this exactly. Deferred prosecution negotiation for the rich and wealth, the rich and powerful. Same type of thing we saw with the SNC-Lavalin case in Canada, you know, where, again, entering a deferred prosecution agreement because they're supposedly so rich and powerful that no one can afford to rein them in. Like, it's just a recipe for anarchy. So, yeah, we've got all the carnage up in Canada that has come with this lackadaisical period. And I understand why. I mean, particularly after the oil bust in 2008, you know, the oil patch went into great pain. The commodity sector took a drubbing, which had been the star turn for the decade before. And everyone said, you know, how are we going to get the Canadian economy back on track? And it was, let's double down on real estate. So they, you know, they basically allowed inflows coming out of wherever they were coming. And even though we brought in, you know, their international money laundering laws, FinTrack, there was a lot of complexity that came in, for example, to do with firms like mine, like investment counsel firms. We've had an enormous amount of regulation increase in the past few years in the aftermath of the credit crisis and the fraud that went on then. But it's always the same. It's the little or medium firms that basically pay the price or have to check all the boxes and do everything, because we know that our butt is on the line. We know that we can't afford, you know, billions of dollars of legal teams to defend us if we are breaking the law. We know that we'll basically, you know, be reprimanded and put out of business, whereas the wealthiest participants have it all their way. And that's exactly what we've seen in areas like Vancouver, where, you know, all the realtors and lenders and people making commissions were happy. It's, you know, happy to see the foreign flows coming in. But all of a sudden, you have all these inefficient properties, vacancies. You know, you have average household incomes in Canada of about 75 or 80,000 a year, and properties multi-million dollars for just shelters in these cities. that's how you get that disconnect. It's that ability to have money flows coming in, hiding behind corporations where you don't have to have transparency as to who the actual owners are. Money walking around in bags, you know, literally gym bags full of cash.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the decade that we're finishing now. So I'm hoping that we're heading into a period of cleanse and catharsis, and certainly in Vancouver, you're already seeing significant reduction in inflows. That stat was pretty amazing that I had just put in that article about Vancouver real estate market experiences dramatic drop in foreign buying. And that stat, the proportion of foreign property buying in the region went from 1 in 8 transactions 3 years ago to 1 in 60 by May of 19. So that's a hell of a drop. And of course, on the other side of that, you're seeing less revenues flowing to governments for land transfer, for, you know, all the municipalities and the even the foreign buyer's tax itself. Since there's less transactions coming in, that's bringing in less revenue than the government had hoped.
You know, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, the governments are desperate for revenues, and these sheltered entities, whatever they might be, are buying properties and providing revenues to the government. And on the other hand, you don't want these bad actors. You don't want to be a magnet for these bad actors. And evidently, and I was not aware of this. I mean, I guess I'm naive in some instances, Danielle, but when I'd look around at Vancouver's prosperity, I obviously knew that most of it was coming from Chinese money, which is why they called it Hongcouver, a lot of flight capital out of Hong Kong after the handover, or up leading up to the handover or the handoff, whatever they called it. And then, of course, rule of law being subject to the whims of the dictator in power. Does that sound like any other place you might know? U.S. becoming more like that every day. They push their flight capital to Canada, to Los Angeles is a big one, San Francisco, New York City. And now those avenues have been cut off partly by the Chinese government and partly by the U.S. and Canadian governments. So where's the money going to head to now? Because you know that you can't stop capital flows when they want out. You can't. If it has to go to Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, whether it's buying casino chips in one place, you know, you could get a bunch of casino chips, take them to another casino, and they'll take other casinos' chips from you. Casino chips are like cash. They're effectively a negotiable instrument. Well, they're not really an instrument, but they're a negotiable symbol, token, right? So, and then one other thing I just wanted to ask your feedback on, because I know you know about these things. Then you got Facebook setting up its own cryptocurrency, Libra. And you know you can't trust them with anything. They lie about everything they do. They've never told the truth about their data policy. They've never told their truth. They're a data mining operation that sells data. So then, you know, I could see like some Chinese organization or person who's in danger buying up like $1 billion worth of Libra and just leaving it there and disappearing and then showing up in New York, still has his money, and trust Facebook more than his own government. I mean, isn't that kind of awful?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Today's show is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp. is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp. has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortex Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who is directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp. is well-capitalized and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding and trades on the NASDAQ, a major exchange, under the ticker symbol USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yes, I think, you know, what we've learned through all this is that all organizations are corruptible and corrupted in some ways. So the most efficient or effective mechanism we have for keeping some semblance of order or rule of law is countervailing forces. You know, I talk about this a lot. Mm-hmm. This is why principles of law have balance and prosecutorial requirements of, you know, double checks on systems. That's why the government was founded the way it was, for example, in the Constitution. And because it's in human nature, the people that are the powers that be want to concentrate that power. And they always have their own, you know, perhaps they think a particularly noble or justifiable rationale for wanting to make things more their way, or, you know, whether they hate government or whether they hate, you know, pure capitalism or socialism, whatever it is they're railing against. The point is that it's very common for humans to take things to one extreme or the other. And so I think any system has to have double checks on it. And, you know, for all the rules that came in, they basically stopped enforcing it. We knew this with the SEC in the regulation space, for example, in securities markets. We saw that in your big implosion that happened in 2006-07. You know, it's covered in The Big Short, but it's gone global since. And certainly, you know, if you go back to what is the money flow? What has driven the money flow? The money flow, I actually just watched an excellent documentary recently on Netflix on the contemporary art market. And I was amazed at how it too is exactly the same forces, which makes sense, right? So you had all this liquidity sloshing around the world driven by debt and central banks pumping it. And as you say, it has to go somewhere. So it flowed into every asset type in the planet. It flowed into cryptocurrencies. It flowed into art that was doubling and tripling, you know, from 6 million to 50 million in a matter of 2 years. Like, this is all what happened. And so people say, well, you know, that money is not going to go anywhere. Well, the reality is that it does go somewhere, because when prices go down, it just evaporates. So people say, well, where will that money go? Well, it'll vanish, because if you bought something for 50 million and suddenly you can only sell it for six, that, you know, difference of 44 million is no more. It's literally gone. So the person that you bought it from perhaps took the money, but then who knows what they end up turning around and putting it into. So this is also back to, you know, The High Beta Rich, which I've recommended before. It's a fantastic book written by Robert Frank in the 2008 aftermath, but it's based on the reality of how these asset bubbles drive all these things together, including government revenues become highly dependent because payroll taxes are way down, because incomes are flat, because unemployment is poor, and you get corporations sidestepping loopholes. So the governments become highly concentrated in revenue flows on things like high-end real estate. And then what happens is, or in the securities market, capital gains tax, that sort of thing. And then, of course, when the bubbles burst, that income flow evaporates as well. And so they're left with even bigger deficits. So this is the pattern that we've seen repeatedly. It's happening in Canada now, in municipalities that became overly concentrated in construction. And as the whole world turns down again and revenues become harder to find, that's where cash flow crunch hits, and then the forced selling begins. And it's going to be this time, you know, certainly in Canada, it's worse for us than it was in any of the last two downturns, because we have this over concentration in real estate, like you did in 06. You actually have it again, as you know, in many areas as well today, in terms of overinflated real estate that's been mean reverting now for the past year and a half or so.
It's different this time, though, because we don't have the fraud. You know, we had this remarkable fraudulent outbreak of liar loans and everything else. So a lot of what we're going through now is much different than what we went through then. But
we have a lot of that fraud, I think, in Canada now more than we had it in the peak of your cycle. Borrowed from your ideas and decided, hey, that worked out great. Let's do that here.
Yeah. Worked out so well that we're going to try it again, right?
I tell you what, like, this is the last person standing kind of stuff. I mean, because there are corruptible people who will do corrupt things, and there are other people who just refuse to. And what I find is life is long, and it's a marathon if you get to survive it. And just an analogy, even in my office where we have our office building, we've been here 16 years this summer. And on either side of us, when we first moved in, there was a Money Concepts franchise, which is this basically you know, a mutual fund shop that sold every kind of financial product to people and called it advice. And on the other side was a real estate lawyer. So in the 16 years we've been here, the Mutt Fund shop next door was subject to a massive class action lawsuit because they levered everybody up in 2008.
Really?
And they had everyone borrowing against, you know, farmers and all these people borrowed against their properties to buy Arabian horses and coins and precious metals and stock mutual funds and everything that would make these sellers rich. And then when it all went bust in 08, of course, there was all this lawsuits. And so the business is now gone. Now we have a mortgage broker who moved in next door, and they've been on a hell of a run in the last few years. So when the bust really gets going here, I'm interested to see how long they survive. And my other neighbor, who was a lawyer in the real estate space, has since been disbarred for difficulties to do with trust account transactions. So as we sit here doing our, you know, boring little fiduciary practice, just trying not to do any harm and to help people steer clear of bubbles and mayhem and fraudsters, which are thick and fast. I always say it's the tortoise and the hare. Some people are hares and they're racing by and everyone's in awe and thinking, wow, that's so cool. They're so smart, until they revealed that they were either really reckless or actually fraudsters, in which case it all goes, you know, to hell in a handbag. And then the, you know, the other people who are kind of just trying to do honest, decent things and make, you know, objective assessments based on risk management, they're more like tortoises. But at the end, it's about trying to survive the race.
Yeah, trying to survive. All right. If you don't survive, nothing can happen. I'd start worrying, though. It sounds like you're surrounded by fraudsters, Danielle, and they're all closing in on you.
Well, they come and go. We're just staying here doing our same thing. But it is a microcosm for the world. And certainly in places like Vancouver and Toronto, the condo market. I mean, I was, you know, when I first came into the law in 1990, there was a massive implosion in the Toronto real estate market at that point, and a big scandal to do with condo fraud and, you know, selling properties multiple times over, flipping and all that. And some of the local developers here were prosecuted and went to jail. But ultimately, it requires the bubble to burst. It requires prices to plunge before people start looking for who to blame. And that's the problem. Like, when it's inflating, when it's looking like people are getting away with something, very few people want to actually, you know, raise start investigating and trying to clamp down on it. As long as prices are going up, people think it's progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes progress just ain't what it used to be, Danielle. You know, it just isn't. And you can only hope that, that somehow it all works out. Justice is served. Just government is the one in charge of meting out justice. And as somebody once said, you know, the courts and justice are distant cousins under the best of circumstances. And what we have now, they don't seem to have any relationship whatsoever. The whole judicial system needs a thorough scrubbing from top to bottom. I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in the U.S., a trial that used to take 2 days, you know, that would come to trial in 6 months, now takes 3 weeks or a month, and you've got like days and days of depositions. Depositions are out of control in the U.S. Pre-trial discovery, as we called it, has really led to a meltdown for the whole judicial system, and has given law firms a license to steal. And one day, I will write my treatise called Legal Theft. I was thinking of a podcast, but it all comes down to the lawyers. You know, nobody else could get away with any of this if it wasn't for the lawyers, right?
Well, again, I was thinking about that non-prosecution agreement that Epstein apparently got with the prosecutors, the federal prosecutors. Apparently, the judge that it was brought before didn't even have, you know, there was an agreed statement of facts, as there is in pleas and negotiated deals, but the evidence wasn't revealed to the judge who was sanctioning the settlement either. So, I mean, I have many good friends who I started in practice with, you know, 25, 30 years ago, who are now on the bench in Canada, and they are, you know, honest, hardworking stand-up people, but ultimately the system is only as good as the individual actors and ethics involved. And that's why, you know, I worry about how we're going to get. So another example is this week in Ontario, there was an announcement, or last week, that they want to bring financial literacy into the curriculum of
nice
public
idea.
Schools.
Right?
It's a great idea. But my question right away is, and who will be teaching it? Who's writing the curriculum? Because if the financial sales side is writing the curriculum, it's going to be a distorted, bastardized version of debt is good, risk is good, buy financial products, and not about how to manage it from the ground up so that the individual has, you know, a focus on saving, on controlling risk, on paying down debt, on trying to build up their own stability. So those are the things that matter most. And if we go around teaching people that trading penny stocks is financial literacy, you know, we're not going to be any further ahead.
Yeah, you happen to be 100% right. And that is a major cause for concern. But again, the situation, as my partner used to tell me from way back when, my law partner, the situation is hopeless, but never serious. So as long as you keep it in perspective, you'll be okay. Like you say, it's a pendulum. Trend is one day very strict, the next day not strict. Loosening of morals, tightening of morals. But it looks like we've been on this moral slippery slope, moral slide down into oblivion for a couple of generations now. I'm still waiting for the pendulum to swing. Hopefully it will be soon. Anyways, that's it for now. So just take a look at Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com, and read the articles we've been talking about today. And take a look at ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Email kl@carrylutz.com. Send us your entry. Danielle, we will catch up with you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.